You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to Bears Over Beers. I'm Jeff Berkus, a writer for Windy City Gridiron, and I'm joined, as always, by EJ Snyder. EJ, Bears are 2-1. What could possibly be going wrong?
Oh, nothing. I think everybody's floating on cloud nine, walking around happy. Isn't that what you've experienced for the past couple of days?
Yeah, Bears Twitter is absolutely the happiest I've ever seen it. There's no dissent. There's no arguments. Everybody is in a good mood.
Seems completely reasonable to me. So I guess our work is done here, and we can come back next week.
I don't think we need any evals. Yeah, we'll just take off. We'll just drink beer and talk about something else. Maybe we'll talk about great movies.
Yeah, like, I don't know, Point Break, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe because you have an awesome t-shirt on from our friends at Homage. If you like the t-shirts over at Homage, click on that link that's in the YouTube box and on our website. Takes you to our affiliate link and, you know, helps us out. But cool t-shirts. I've already worn my Homage t-shirts for the week because I feel like I've just been living on this camera this week. But good stuff. I really like my Topps football one, which is like a neutral football shirt. It's just a Topps trading cards logo, which I kind of love. And I'm flirting with the idea if that Bucks game gets relocated to Minnesota. I think I might go, and I think, yeah, I might wear my Topps football shirt because I don't want to. I'm just there to watch the game, you know. May the better team win. I'm not there to cheer for any team or another. So they got some really cool stuff. You've got they've got a whole pop culture section. You dipped into that. There's a couple shirts that you pulled from that. It's a lot of fun ones. So check those out if your t-shirt supply. Everybody's t-shirt supply needs to be replenished regularly. So check that out. But yeah, the Bears were able to get in the win column once again. They're 2-1. They're tied for the NFC North lead. You know, although they have got tiebreaker issues with that. If you are already starting to talk about the NFC North, but Lovie Smith's homecoming was, you know, tarnished with a loss. That white beard wasn't working for the Texans. They hung in. The Texans obviously could have won that game, but the Bears were able to make the plays when they needed to. Kind of a fun win if you take away the whole quarterback situation and what's happening with the passing game. But any big thoughts before we dive into the beers and then our player evals?
You know, I'll take a win any week. And, you know, but again, we talked about this. It's sort of disingenuous to say that because we talked about this at the start of this season. How are we going to talk about this Bears season? What's important for this Bears team? And it's not wins this year. Every year wins are important. But wins aren't the top thing this year. And if you think they are, you're probably not seeing this correctly or understanding where the Bears started out, which was a deep, deep hole that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy dug for the franchise and Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus are trying to pull the Bears out of. It's about getting more talent in the building. It's about clearing the books off financially and making sure that they have the freedom next year to not be encumbered by all those previously poor financial decisions. Those are the biggest things. So this year we're looking for development in the offense, development in young players, seeing who is going to be sticking around. And there was some of that in this game as well. So a win is nice, fun to spoil Lovie's homecoming. The running game was very good to see. Again, this is pieces, parts, not all the parts working great, but the running game worked very, very well. And nice to see a team kind of, quote unquote, learn how to win, right? Hang around in a close game. There are a lot of close games in the NFL. Kick a field goal at the end and come out with a W. You have to do that
three, four, five times a year in the NFL. I don't care who you are. We saw the Bucks do it a couple of weeks ago. Like this is a thing NFL teams have to do to be good and win games. So there were some positives, obviously overshadowed by the QB development conversation that we talked about in the pre-party, but you know, good weather, not a monsoon. The new turf looked really nice, which is, if you're familiar with Chicago football, a big deal. Overall, I don't want to say it was like enjoyable as a game, but I'll take the development pieces. I'll take the win. Not bad.
Yeah, not much to add more than I already have on two review shows to start the week. So I'm just going to launch into beer. I brought on New Glarus Brewing Company's Belgian Red Beer. It's a very good beer. I've had this before. I don't know if I brought it on the pod before. I feel like maybe. I know I've brought some New Glarus stuff on, but I'm excited for this. So I'm just going to get this going while you tell me what you got.
Yeah, I'm jealous because I'm familiar with New Glarus offerings, but I've never had their red and I love reds. So that's pretty cool.
It just exploded on me. So that was fun.
That's okay. We are professionals. I've had that happen on a podcast before and you managed it quite nicely.
Minimum spillage.
We love that. No new keyboard needed. I was down in Texas, not last weekend, but weekend before, and did a beer run because we were going to my buddy's house and I didn't want to show up empty handed. So one of the beers we took over was labeled as a red and its name was something Rojo, and it was by a local brewery. And I was like, yeah, I love reds. Great. I didn't have one until the next day. I had some of the other beers that we took over that night. We went back over the next night to sort of pre-funk before the Texas game because he lives very close to the stadium. And I was like, I'm going to have one of those reds. I swear to God, I pull out the red, crack it open, take a pull off that thing, and was just mind blown. Tastes like Mountain Dew Code Red. Like it straight up tastes like Mountain Dew Code Red, which I don't drink, but I have had before. It's red soda, whatever the red soda is right where you live. Big Red, Mountain Dew Code Red. And I'm like, what? Because I don't like my beers tasting like soda. And I look and it says brewed with red soda.
So, okay. Well, I gotta need some clarification. Mountain Dew Code Red is cherry Mountain Dew. Big Red is cream soda.
It's all red and very sweet.
Yeah.
But and that's vanilla, what this right? was in a can that was okay, labeled just, beer.
Cherry.
Yeah. Not a seltzer. This was labeled as a beer. And I cracked it, poured it back, and was like, oh my God. Because not my thing. And then I look on the can, it says brewed with red soda. And I was like, all right, this is interesting. Glad I didn't buy it. Came in a 4-pack, which was really nice because I didn't have a whole lot to get rid of. But I was like, no. Anyways, I did not bring one of those today. I brought a good solid beer from Silver City Brewing. This is their Oktoberfest lager. It is 6.2 by volume. Silver City is a brewery right up in Paulsbo, Washington. Love many of their offerings, have featured many of them on the pod before, but their Oktoberfest lager is a really good one. Very solid representation of the style and just showed up in stores. So I nabbed it.
Awesome. Well, let's get them going and let's get into this. So for those of you that are new to our new format, just a quick recap, we're going to dive into one player each. Some weeks we'll dive into the same player. We haven't done that yet. We've each taken a different player so far. I'm waiting for Justin Fields to have a somewhat relevant game for us to dive into it. Just for full disclosure, that's what's happening. And we'll both dive into Justin when that happens. But so far, we've each taken a different player. My choice this week was Braxton Jones. I wanted to look at Braxton Jones this week because, look, this is a fifth-round rookie player that's started and played at left tackle from day one. Like, what the heck? Like, let's look at this and let's see how he's doing. I really liked the matchup that this provided. Jerry Hughes, he's not, you know, this is not an all-pro guy. You know, he's not going up against Nick Bosa or anything like that. This is Jerry Hughes. He's been around the league for a long time. He's in his 13th year, so he's a savvy vet. He's going to have a speed move. He's going to have counters off that speed move. He's going to have a long arm. Like, he's going to have everything in his pass rush toolkit that you could ask a young tackle to be prepared for. And he's going to have little games that he plays with his hands. He's going to have a lot of stuff that, that he, you know, a veteran, savvy veteran defensive end is going to show. And so I figured that he'd be going up against Braxton a lot. That's, I was focused on that from the start. That's who I wanted to watch. So that was my choice for the week. You made the choice of who you were going to take by basically blocking me from doing it through a text message.
100% said you can have anybody you want except this guy, because you got your choice last week. You needed the salve of David Montgomery after the Packers game, and I don't blame you one bit. I was like, I get Khalil Herbert this week. Khalil Herbert was a guy that I really liked in the draft. He was huge value for the Bears. We'll talk about that. Showed some real flashes as a rookie, and then unfortunately, because of a David Montgomery injury, we never want to see anybody get injured, but he was featured in this game and showed everybody what I thought he would, which is, hey, with the featured role, he can produce like a lead back in the NFL and then some. And we had, again, like you said, you're waiting for a Justin Fields game that feels relevant to talk about Justin Fields game. This is a very relevant game for Khalil Herbert, and it's an important conversation moving forward because David Montgomery is up for contract. Khalil Herbert is an extremely affordable option based on where he was drafted. So we need to talk about his game. And was this just lucky, or was this an indication of a skill we could count on, or skills we could count on going forward as Bears fans?
Very timely, since we did the Montgomery thing last week. So it's good to have this. I just, for the record, it wasn't, the text wasn't, I did not receive a text from EJ that said, "Hey Jeff, I want to cover Khalil Herbert this week." The text that I got was, "You don't get to do Khalil Herbert this week." That was the text that I received. And I just responded back, "You don't know me. You don't know that that's what I wanted to do." And I mean, of course, I would have taken it had it not been there. Somebody needed to do it. But I wasn't going to take the first pick this week or anything.
I thought it was a typo on your part. I thought you were trying to type, "You don't own me."
Well, there's that. Yeah, which is true. I just should have just done it.
I'm not your mother.
No, I want to do other things, you know.
Yeah,
for sure. Although I will say I feel a little bit more comfortable looking at offensive line play than a lot of other positions, and particularly in a tight time crunch, I'm going to probably lean back on looking at offensive line. And there's a lot of offensive line tape to look at this year. So, I'm going to look at Tevin Jenkins multiple times. I'm going to look at Braxton Jones multiple times. I'm probably going to look at Larry Borum multiple times. That just is what it is because of where this team's at and where my comfort level lies. So I'm not going to necessarily go out on a limb and try to do a quick evaluation of, Jaquan Brisker, right?
Right.
I got a little work to do on safety. So
yeah.
We flip a coin. Do you have the coin, or do you want me to keep going?
You can keep flipping the coin, and my call will be the same. I am staying with my losing ways.
Okay, well, I'm flipping an Iowa quarter.
Tails. So
it is heads.
See? This is 0 for 3? 0
for you go 3. First.
This is 0 for 3. Okay, you defer. But I'm going to see how long this streak keeps going, because at some point it's just going to become improbable. All right, so Khalil Herbert, let's talk about all the basics. Drafted in the 6th round. Keep that in mind, folks. 6th round. Every year, there are low-round running backs who produce, UDFA running backs who produce, and produce very, very well. If you're going to spend a first-round pick on a running back, just don't. Like, just don't at this point. He was number 217 overall. He came out of Virginia Tech. That's a little bit of a misnomer. Started his college career at Kansas prior to his final season, which was in Blacksburg. He was a grad transfer, so his official school is Virginia Tech. Spent a bunch of time at Kansas before that. He's 24 years old. He's 5'9", a little bit short on the running back side, but not terribly so, and 212 pounds. That comes into play on his relative athletic score. It was only 6.92. Typically, you'd like to see it be a little bit higher. Athleticism is very desirable at a position like running back. The reason that his RAS was not great was twofold. One, size worked against him. Again, that height measurement put him up with a quote-unquote less than ideal size compared to other running backs. And his explosive metrics were not terribly explosive. So these are the things that basically devalued his relative athletic score and probably, quite frankly, allowed him to fall all the way to the Bears. Speed, He was 4.48 40 guy, and he had a 1.58 second 10-yard split, were big pluses on his evaluation. He is very fast. The biggest attributes, though, were vision and cuts and the combination of the two, and we'll talk about those characteristics and how they combine a bunch in the runs he had this week. They're lethal when he combines them in the way that he does. We saw that multiple times this week against the Texans. 2022 production so far, he's got 240 rushing yards on 33 carries. That's 7.3 per tote. He is an explosive runner. Three touchdowns, a long of 52. Only four receptions for 13 yards. He's not a huge weapon in the passing game. He's what I would call functional in the passing game. He can get better. I think he has those skills, but that's not where he's at right now in his development. I don't have his run blocking or his pass blocking grade. I reached out to PFF for that. They don't have it yet in their table. They do. It is something they track, though, so I'll try and fill that in later. That's Khalil Herbert in a nutshell. It's where he came from. He's been the Bears a couple of years. The reason he's relevant is the conversation that everyone's having about David Montgomery. Ryan Poles has already talked about that. Will you or won't you extend David Montgomery? We love David Montgomery. He's a very tough runner. We saw his talents when you reviewed against the Packers. Very talented guy, but running back is a high injury position. And if you've got one under contract who's a tremendous value, who can give you this kind of production, it makes it so you don't have to give a bad extension to a running back. If David Montgomery wants to take a hometown discount to stay with the Bears, I'd love that. He's a great player. If he wants to hold them over barrel and get every dime, the Bears can say, see ya, knowing they've got Khalil Herbert in the barn. Let's talk about the All-22. Again, I'll give a quarter and the actual game time measurement when the play started, because not everybody has access to All-22. So first quarter, 8:25 to go. This is his first rep in the ballgame. David Montgomery's had several good rushes, ends up going down, staying down in pain, leaves. Khalil Herbert comes in. From the very first rep, we see a really good run. He's got a great little hesitation. This is designed to be basically an inside run between left guard and tackle. They put up two duo blocks. That means two guys on one defender trying to open up the hole. Tight end and tackle go one way, guard and center go the other way, and they open this hole. And the hole is there. He runs up to that, and linebackers fill, which is great. So he sort of slides in behind that left tackle tight end block, waits to see what happens, and then scrapes and goes to the next aisle over, if you will, and goes off left tackle. So not exactly where the run was designed to go, but in doing that, and this is something he does over and over again, he draws defenders into the mess. They have to sort of commit and they get tangled up in the defensive lineman. He squirts to the outside. That's great feel. That's great vision. It's not a tremendous cut. He's basically stepping over about half a lane. Then he absolutely destroys the Texans linebacker, Grugier Hill, with a stiff arm. And I mean destroys. Like, he puts this guy on the ground so his cleats are pointing straight up. Like, he buries this guy. That's only about 3 or 4 yards after he took the handoff. He ends up picking up another 4.5 yards after that stiff arm. Keep that in mind, too. We're going to talk about yards he, quote unquote, earned that were all on him, that weren't blocked up, but he did something. He made a cut. He broke a tackle. He made somebody miss. And yards after that, I'm just sort of putting directly in his bucket. So we know what the total is. We're going to see how many directly attribute to him. So great first effort from him. Good feel, good cut, massive stiff arm, earns a bunch of extra yards with that. 7:28 in the first quarter. This is from the Texans 22. This is a straight middle run. There's not a lot to this. Breaks a tackle at the 19, so 4 yards after he got the handoff, basically. Picks up an additional +8 through contact. Now, we talked about his size, 5'9", 212. Very strong, not just a speed guy at all. Runs through contact very well, twists very well, uses leverage. An additional 8 yards after contact, basically running straight up the middle, is pretty damn impressive. He does it here. 6:45 in the first quarter. This is a fullback lead. Carney Blassingame's in front of him. He commits inside to draw the blockers into the wash again. He basically follows and says, I'm going to the middle. Steps right up to the line so he could basically touch his blockers. That basically draws everybody in. Then he takes a look at what's there and goes the way he needs to. Follows beautifully to the outside. Blasting game picks off the outside defender and then perfectly cuts it back inside and finishes with power for the touchdown. This is the first touchdown run. If you look at that again, commits, puts a foot in the ground, draws some people in, gets to the outside, follows that block, and then says, nope, I'm going to cut it back inside. Almost sort of cuts back twice, like cuts back and then adjusts his cutback and then finishes with power, extends across the goal line. A bunch of things on display, and the Bears pick up six.
This is actually going to be a play that I wanted to talk about with Braxton as well, because he sticks on his block. He wins the rep early. Like he does a really nice job, wins the rep early. And then he stalks his guy downfield as the play continues, and he makes a second block on the same guy. And that guy could have stopped Herbert short by a yard, but because Braxton kept with his block and made a second block on the guy, Herbert was able to score. So it was an assist from Braxton. So this is the play where these two guys really came together. And he got a plus grade for me on that one. That was above and beyond for the young tackle.
Multiple contributions in this particular play. And that's what it takes to have a long rushing touchdown in the NFL. Blasting game has a good block. You know, the rest of the line basically sort of basically cuts right. It's basically a right shift to sort of move those guys out of the way. And, you know, Braxton's got to stalk his guy. Blasingame's got to get his block. Herbert's got to set up the run correctly and cut it back. All of those things need to come into play for a long touchdown. They get one early. A lot of people didn't think this was a score when it happened because he extended the ball kind of in the pile. Signal comes up. I think the Texans were a little bit stunned that, hey, Montgomery went out of the game. Maybe they, you know, let their guard down a little bit. Hey, this is the backup. And he rips off a 20 plus yard touchdown. And that's pretty impressive. So we get into the second quarter, early in the second quarter, 14:49. This is the one I was talking about. He's open as the dump off. He basically flexes out. He's in an inline, almost an inline alignment. Justin just never sees him. He flexes out. It's like a 4-yard curl. He goes out, puts his numbers up to the quarterback, says, hey, if you're in trouble, I'm the guy. He's got, I believe, Braxton coming back into his lap. Braxton's 70.
Yep.
Braxton's coming back into his lap. Justin really doesn't ever get time to look at him. He's there. He doesn't hit him. Is it Justin's fault? No. Blocking didn't really hold up. You know, it's just one of those plays. Second quarter. 14:18 inside handoff again, presses the block. This is a running back skill that's really critical. And you see a lot of runners, especially young runners that don't have success, aren't practitioners of this skill. You need to get right up on the rump of your blocker and be there so that you can basically feel him, see which way the leverage is going on that block, draw the defenders in, and then get left or right. Herbert is excellent at pressing blocks. He does it all the time. Presses this block and cuts back to pick up 10. Like, gets outside. Again, feels that leverage, says, nope, just going to slide inside. Picks up 10. It's that skill. It's one demonstrable skill that he has over and over again. You'll see it in most of the long runs he had in this game. He'll press a block. We go all the way down to 46 seconds before halftime. There's a bunch of Ebner plays. You're wondering what the big gap is. Tristan Ebner came in and basically was sort of 50-50 for the rest of that quarter. They had an interception drive. There's a bunch of things that went on. So Herbert doesn't get his really next quantitative touch until 46 seconds left before halftime. This is a middle run. He shows patience, hesitation, and curvilinear movement. Curvilinear movement, big word, not my word. This is a steal from Matt Waltman, one of my favorite analysts who does the RSP, the rookie scouting portfolio, talks about curvilinear movement and how running backs that use it well make people miss. So on this, he makes a tackler miss. He never touches him. It's not what you would consider a juke or a jab step or anything else. He basically hesitates, gets out, and then starts running a curve and basically just runs around this guy that dives at him but can't reach him because he's running on a curve. So he doesn't really get contact, but that guy would have been an able and willing tackler had he done literally anything else. So this is I give him a plus five on this one because the guy dove at him about 6 yards into the run and he picked up five more after that. And again, it's because of the way he chose to attack the angle and the defender. This is, you're starting to get a picture of a multi-talented, multifaceted back. It's not just power. It's not just speed. It's not just cuts. It's not just vision. It's not just timing. It's all of those things. And what Herbert's able to do, and we saw this last year as well, which were some of his really sort of splash plus plays as rookie, he strings those things together. He uses four or five of those things in a single run where another runner might have picked up 8 or 9 or 11, and he ends up picking up 15 or 17 or 25 because he just sort of keeps pressing defenders one way or another, making them miss, running through them, running around them. And the ability to string moves together is what makes him really, really special.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that jumps out at you is that he looks like he's shot out of a cannon, right? So that like 0 to 60 and nothing flat is what you see immediately. And you say, oh, this is just a really fast guy, right? This is just one of those guys that just, he can fly, but you know, he's going to just go down easy. You know, he's not going to have any moves because there's plenty of running backs that are like that, where all they have is speed. They're just a speed tool. But you're seeing just how many tools he was showing off when he was given the runway to do so.
Yeah. Next play is the last play before halftime. Runs off the right tackle versus a loaded box. There are eight guys, and they're all just lined up in a line right along the offensive line and the tight ends of the Bears. So it's a loaded box. Bears just down block left. This is super basic blocking. Basically, everybody angle left about 30 degrees, fire out and push your guys. So they down block to the left. He shows great hesitation going off the right edge, right tackle, and gains 9 against a loaded box. Like, they knew it was coming. It was a very straight block. There's no window dressing on this play. No major motion, misdirection, orbit. Nope. He just gets it, presses that block up, waits for, I believe it's Cole Kmet on that end of the line to sort of move a guy about half the yard out of the way, guns it, and runs through contact for, 9 yards. So that's the half. Seen a bunch of stuff demonstrated. Haven't seen the big run yet. That's coming. But overall, how'd you feel about that first half watching it? Because it was mostly him. Montgomery went out little less than middle first quarter.
Well, I kept thinking how bad I felt for David Montgomery because he's coming off this great game. You know, we talked about it all week in different shows. Like, look, they're going to find a way to get Monty a touchdown here because he had such a great game and didn't get in the end zone last week. And, you know, you see the success that Khalil Herbert had and you think Dave Montgomery was going to have some success on the ground. You know, he was going to have another 100-yard game. I think that I feel confident in saying that he was going to get a touchdown or two, right? Like you could feel that this was going to be another nice game for David Montgomery. And, you know, he's an easy guy to cheer for. And so part of me was that. And then the other part of you is like, and that was the worst thing to happen to David Montgomery, because you give this younger back an opportunity here. And he's showing that he's more than just the speed guy. He's more than just the guy that gets shot out of the cannon and is the change of pace. Like, this guy looks like he can carry the load. And I know people are going to say, well, it's just the Texans defense, but you know, these are professional defenders. You know, there's a lot of savvy veterans on this defense here. These are not just guys that are, you know, don't deserve to play in the NFL. They've kind of filled that defense with a collection of players, and he looks real. I mean, that was my takeaway more than anything. I was like, he looks real. The Bears have an embarrassment of riches at running back.
I would agree. Their running back room is as loaded in the first two spots as any running back room in the league. And I think that's probably a controversial statement for people that don't know Khalil Herbert and haven't paid attention. For people that have watched him run, I don't think there's really any argument with that statement. So we open up the third quarter. This is the big one. The first real impactful touch, 11:25 left in the third quarter, huge hole up the middle. So this isn't the running back's fault. This is a good plus play for the Bears. It's basically a spread formation. The Texans defenders don't pack in. They leave a space in the middle, and there is a massive hole. You could drive a truck through the hole that Khalil Herbert runs through. I'm not going to blame him for having a great hole. He makes use of it. Here's the difference. He breaks an ankle tackle, outruns pursuit for 52 yards, 43 of those yards were after the ankle tackle attempt. So if he gets tripped up there and stumbles and picks up two or three more yards, this is a good gain. This is a 9 or maybe 12 yard gain, depending on where he ended up rolling to. He keeps his balance, and in keeping his balance, accelerates and just breaks a couple angles, period, with, again, that acceleration you were talking about earlier. 52 yards in one run, 43 of them are on him. So at 9 yards, this could have been, you know, basically just a first down run. Instead, becomes a massive explosive play, one of the biggest plays of the day for the Bears. 8:25 left in the third quarter. This is just a plunge, but he keeps turning, keeps his legs moving. This is the second TD. This is more just feel and will. This is sort of from the goal line, gets in, turns his back, and this is a skill running backs either just sort of have or don't. I don't know if there's a great way to teach this. It's a bit innate. Like, how do you just keep your leverage, keep twisting until you can find that little bit of a vacuum and just force your way into it? He does it. They score. It's not super pretty or amazing, but some running backs have that quote-unquote nose for the goal line. Some don't. He could have been stopped on this play. Ends up pushing through for the touchdown, his second on the day. We jump to the fourth quarter, 12:38 left. Another fullback lead play with Blasingame from the Bears' own 8. So he gets contact at the 12, 4 yards past the line of scrimmage, and bulls for another 4 after being wrapped up. That's a very positive gain. There's falling forward for a yard. There's pushing forward for 2 yards. And then there's sort of twisting and pushing and bullying and getting 4 yards after solid contact. Just adds to his total. Last play I want to talk about, 3:05 left in the fourth quarter. Getting near the end of the game. Again, very close game. These are important touches, right? Bears end up winning this thing by a field goal. Ball starts at the Chicago 12. He pushes the left edge blocks really well, then does that patented sort of break outside, drops a defender with another stiff arm at the 13 and speeds up the left edge for 19. The defender contacted him 1 yard past the line of scrimmage, and he dropped him again. He has a very good stiff arm. So 18 of these 19 yards are on him. Tristan Ebner does not show that kind of elusiveness. He probably would have had a 1 yard gain here. Nothing against Tristan Ebner. He does not. He is more of the speed guy. He is a better receiver. He is different things than Khalil Herbert, but right here, he probably picks up 1.5 yards. Khalil Herbert picks up 19. As a total body of work, the overall impact on the outcome of the game is huge. He piled up the lion's share of the biggest rushing day the Bears have had since 1982. They got 281 yards. He was responsible for 157 and 2 TDs. 82 and a half of those were extra yards directly attributed to him. Broken tackle, making a guy dive and miss, a couple of massive stiff arms. 82 of 157 was production that he created with skill. That's a thing, folks. You're talking about an 80-yard day would have been a very good day. 80 yards in the NFL against professional defenders. Solid day, would have powered the offense. Fully understand that. Basically twice that on merit because you are a very good runner, you are extremely good at what you do, and you have a variety of skills. That's a guy that can be a lead back, and we need to start talking about him as the lead back in 2023, because if Montgomery presses the Bears and says, I need all the money, and that's nothing against David Montgomery, get your money, you play the most fungible position in professional sports, right? Yep. Get paid while you can. But if he's going to press the Bears and they need to put money in other areas, no, full well that Khalil Herbert can be your lead back. He's 24. He's fairly low mileage. He has a multitude of skills. You can get more running backs in the 5th, 6th, 7th round, the undrafted free agency round, to fill in that room behind him. Feel confident that the Chicago rushing attack will be top flight if they have to let Montgomery walk, because he is not willing to take anything less than top dollar.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way to approach it. If I remember off the top of my head, last week I had Montgomery in the 80s for the yards that he created as well. Now, we're two different people and maybe judging things slightly differently. Somebody else might come in and say, you guys are nuts. I see 60. You know, these are our own opinions, and we haven't been doing this exact thing together for long enough to know that, like, oh, I would have I would have had 82 and a half yards as well, right? Like that's, I don't know that we're comparing, I think we're comparing apples to apples, but it might be, you know, Macintosh to Honeycrisp, right? I mean, you know, it's
just a little bit. Look at the fall comparison out of you.
Heck yeah, man. Yeah, I got my jacket. I mean, I'm a Midwesterner. I got a little jacket on.
You're all good here.
I still got shorts on. I mean, like this is the time, right?
This is the time.
What's hot girl summer transitions to fat boy fall? You know, here we are.
Does it?
We're in fat guy fall. That's okay. What I heard.
All right, fair enough. I'll take your word for it.
This is the time.
You're the man on the scene in the Midwest.
Time to shine. So yeah, I think. If you wanted to compare the two games, I think they're similar in Montgomery's week two and Herbert's game three here. So, and so like you're saying, if you're going to get, they're different, but if you're going to get a similar level of production from Khalil Herbert as your lead, and you can find a secondary piece in next year's draft or next year's free agency or whatever, and you just have that as a philosophy where you're going to continue to bring in a new person for the running back room, or have somebody sign that you can get under, a reasonable amount for dollars wise, it's probably the right approach from an analytics standpoint. It just sucks as Bears fans because you want to see those running backs, and you want, you know, because that's part of the identity of the franchise. You want to see these guys that stick around for a while, accumulate the yards, you know, be those fixtures. They're easy guys to root for. So there is that piece of it that I have a hard time with that I do think is important to team building and fandom and all that. But you should feel good about Khalil Herbert as the guy waiting in the wings. And if you didn't before Sunday, you certainly should now. let's take a quick break. Let's let somebody pay for these beers. And then on the other side of this, we'll get into Braxton Jones.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, EJ, let's talk about Braxton Jones. So here's what I did for Braxton Jones. So it's you got to watch all of the plays because he's in all of the plays. And I used Lester's system with a little bit of my twist. I did the same thing for Tevin Jenkins, where you go through, you watch every play, and you say, you know, did he make the block? Is this a reasonable play here for him to have made? And if he makes the block, you give him a, I give him a zero, like an O on my mark, Lester would give him a plus. I reserve the plus for like a plus play, like a something that really stands out, like a point of attack block that really moves the man off the spot, opens up a hole, a one-on-one pass block where he stonewalls a guy, gives the quarterback extra time, like a really impressive offensive line play gets a plus for me. And then a minus is, got beat, missed the block, his man made the tackle, right? Like it's fairly basic. There's plenty of subjectivity. Somebody else could go through this tape and have a very different opinion on what the overall grade is. I fully accept that. This is how I did it. I'm letting you know my approach. 61 plays is what I graded. I had him as 51 out of 61 of making his block. So it's an 84%. I think that if you want to think of it as a school, like back in school, 84% is a B. I think that it's maybe a little lower than that. I think I would have docked him a little bit more for some of the negative plays. It feels like a lower letter grade than a B. So there's that. And then I only had two plus plays for him, which I think over an entire game, especially in a game where there's a ton of production that piled up in the run game, you might expect a little bit more of plus plays here, but I only had two that really, really stuck out to me as being worthy of pluses. Again, this is a young player. He's a fifth round rookie left tackle. He's got plenty of room to grow. But the overall take, and I'll get into some specific plays here, but the overall takeaway for me was he looks like he is a professional football player and he belongs on the field, but he also has a long way to go in certain aspects of his game. A couple plays to try to demonstrate that. I'll start with positive, and I'm going to sandwich this. And it just worked out that way because that's how the quarters worked out. So quarter one, 7:13 left. This is a run play. He's got number 56 across from him. I don't remember that guy's name. Off the top of the snap, wins the rep and just drives his man off the ball. And then his guy peels off and runs down the field and he sticks with the block. And this is what I was talking about earlier, that this is the touchdown run, but he sticks with the block and makes a second block on that same player to allow Herbert to get into the end zone. And I love that nature of a run block where the play is not over until the whistle blows. And he won his block. He could have very well just stood there and just said, well, I did my job. The play's over. But he continued to stalk his guy. I was able to push him into the end zone. And that made the difference, I think, at the end there. Not that the Bears wouldn't have scored at the 1 yard line, but that's a really nice block there. It's like a double block. So to me, that was a positive. That was one of his pluses.
Was it 56, you said?
Yeah.
That's Book.
Book.
That's Thomas Booker.
Okay. Well, I didn't look up. It was all about 55.
Right.
Right. For sure. Jerry Hughes. That was who I was wanted to watch him against. And then 96 is Malik, the big defensive Collins. Tackle.
Book we interviewed at Shrine.
Oh, okay.
Thomas Booker, defensive tackle, Stanford, ended up getting drafted by the Texans. Great, great dude. Rookie as well. So that's fun. So if you want to see that interview, head over to the Bootleg Football Clips channel. There's a really cool, 10-minute shot with us talking with Book at the Shrine Bowl. Very, very smart football player.
All right. We'll see. Now, I didn't look up all these other guys that weren't Jerry Hughes.
That's okay.
So that's on me. But Malik Collins is number 96. So that's the next play that I wanted to talk about. So this is a running play. This is Malik makes the play in the backfield for a loss here. And this was I'm blaming half of this on Cody Whitehair. The Whitehair gives absolutely no you can tell that he's supposed to help Braxton secure the block here. Like he kind of puts his arm out to the side and then he runs to the second level. The defender does a really nice job of crashing in and then maintaining that leverage throughout and never letting Braxton get inside of him, and then he just runs him down the line and makes the play. So you can just kind of see Braxton Jones running with the defender, and the defender ends up making the play. I'm giving Braxton a minus on that, but that's really on White Hair there. Like, he has to come in and do a little bit more work there to make sure that block is secured, because that's a good player in front of him. And you have to make sure that block is secure there. So it is a negative for Braxton, because his man made the play behind the line of scrimmage. He didn't make the block. And so just from grading is what it is, you have to give a minus here, but that's really on White Hair. And I think that's one of those things that, you know, we talked about here, we talk about with Lester, is that it takes time for these guys to gel. It takes time. So that's why it's really important to get your best five out there, let them play, let them see what happens, let them gel, right? So that's one of those things that I think they probably stop the film there in the offensive line room, and they say, okay, like, what happened here, Cody? Like, what were you thinking here? You know, you got to do a little more than just like put your hand out. And so I wanted to mention that one, because I thought it's very easy to blame Braxton, and I'm doing it, but he also need to blame the guard there, because he's not doing his job in making sure that a tackle has that. It's more important to get that giant defensive lineman blocked than it is to get the linebacker on the second level. So one I wanted to highlight. The third play I want to highlight, this was a pass pro rep. This is a quarter two, 7:21 left. This is against Jerry Hughes. I could have probably highlighted all of the Jerry Hughes. I could have talked about them all. He gave me exactly what I wanted. Yeah. This is why I wanted to watch this game. Jerry Hughes knows what he's doing. You don't stay in the league for 13 years, especially at defensive line, without knowing what you're doing. This was a pure speed move. This was amazing to me, though, that Hughes wins instantly at the line. Braxton's like spinning around. This is the play action rollout away from Braxton Jones that somehow Jerry Hughes just doesn't get the sack. Like he's chasing. And then I think he goes for the strip sack and he kind of dives at Fields. I don't think Fields knows that he's getting chased, and he somehow escapes the sack. This is what our coaches would call a lookout block, where you get beat so fast that as you're turning around, you go, look out, because that's the only way you're giving your quarterback any protection, is to yell at him that you just got completely beat. And this is, I mean, to me, this is like a double negative. Like, there's no way that this backside defensive end should be anywhere close to making a play on a play action rollout on the other side. But because he is instantly beat, Hughes is basically on a dead sprint towards Fields from the go. And so as Fields is surveying the field, Hughes is able to get close to him. I mean, it was just like, yikes. Like, it was one of the worst reps I've ever seen.
And the reason they ran that play is to give Braxton protection.
Yes.
If you have absolutely a rookie left tackle against a veteran pass rusher, you're not going to chip him. You can't chip him on every play, right? You can't give a duo block on every play. So some plays you're going to say, hey, man, you know, not very many. If you're smart, you're going to say, hey, man, you got to just man up. You're going to have Jerry Hughes. It's one-on-one. This is your play. We're going to give you like five of these today, and you're probably only going to win like two, but we're going to give you five. The other ones that aren't chips and aren't duos, you have to do something else. And what you do is run plays away from him. So he's got to make the longest possible arc to have any impact on the play, which says to Braxton, look, all you got to do is get a hand on him, push him out wide, extend the arc, you know, slow him up, trip him up, whatever you got to do. And we'll just run away from you. So he's not really going to be in the play from the get-go. You saw teams do this with Khalil Mack all the time, right? They would just run stuff away from him on the other side, regardless of who the tackle was. So the whole reason they did this was to protect Braxton, and he couldn't get enough on this particular play to even do that, which is, like you said, a double bummer.
So overall, because this is the only pass play that I want to talk about, because it was like the most egregious. when there was chip help, he was fine. when there was the opportunity for Cody Whitehair to come over and cover up, that covered up a couple blemishes. Like, he got beat by a counter move. Whitehair was there to soak it up. He really, and if it wasn't Jerry Hughes, he was for the most part fine. So if it was a lower grade pass rusher, he, you know, is basically matched up against somebody that didn't give him any issues. Against Jerry Hughes, Jerry Hughes beat him with speed. Jerry Hughes beat him with a counter. Jerry Hughes beat him with power. So I wanted to see if maybe he could handle some of those, some aspects of that on his own. And, you know, always struggles with speed or always struggles with power. You know, oh, you know, that counter he wasn't expecting, whatever. Hughes used all the tools and all the tools worked. And so that's going to be something that we're going to need to continue to watch down the line is what does he start picking up? Is he starting to improve part of that game? He's going to need another off season of strength and conditioning work. I think that seems pretty obvious. He's a rookie. That's fine. Like that happens. But I think that from a pass protection technique standpoint, if you have a good pass rusher on the other side, you're going to have to plan for it because I'm not sure that he has the tools to handle that one-on-one right now. That's my takeaway from my reps against Jerry Hughes. That's why I wanted to watch Jerry Hughes. Again, like, he's a good player. I didn't think it was fair to do that judgment against Nick Bosa, but it's something to keep in mind. Fourth play I wanted to talk about, another running play. He did this a lot where he would basically not fire off the line and he would kind of hesitate and let the defensive end shoot up field. And then he would just kind of push him past. It was just kind of, and it's not a unique technique. But he, in this case, this is a, sorry, third quarter, 10:19 left. This is against Jerry Hughes. He does that hesitation, but Hughes is so quick around the edge that he's able to basically bend around Braxton real quick, and he made a TFL on Herbert there. And, you know, he did the little hesitation, let the guy get by you, you know, push him upfield a number of times. Hughes had already seen it. He knew it was coming, and he beat him to the punch and got rewarded with a tackle for loss. Some of the other players he did it to, and he was successful. But it's one of those things where you know, you can pull that out every once in a while, but you can't rely on it, or you have to be able to recover if that guy goes in quick. And he got caught on that one, and he was not able to recover. So that was a rough one. And then this would have been the other touchdown. This was closer to the goal line. This is 8:49 left, run play. He's got Jerry Hughes in front of him. He is at the point of attack. This ball is coming, is being run right between him and Cody Whitehair. He initially is a little bit of a stalemate, but then he does a really nice job of readjusting his hands and gets leverage, pushes Hughes back, knocks him over. And again, point of attack, blasting game comes in, Herbert behind him, scores a touchdown. I thought it was a really nice play for him to stick with it. To me, it was a plus because he could have just kind of stalemated there, but he was able to readjust his hands, get leverage, and push Hughes over, which was the difference in the touchdown. So to me, overall, I think that Braxton Jones had about what I expected him to have. He was maybe the bad reps were split pretty evenly between runs and passes. It wasn't like, oh, he was amazing in the run game and he's terrible in the pass game. He had negatives in both. It was just that the Bears ran a lot. So, you know, relatively speaking, his percentages would be a little better in the run. The two positive plays were run plays that were both touchdowns that I think he deserves assists on. He had positive reps on those two touchdown runs that I don't think that they score unless he has those reps. So I would say that he overall was a positive, but there's a lot that they are scheming knowing that Braxton is going to struggle. And so, like you said, they're rolling the pocket, they're chipping, they're not putting him out on the island a lot in pass reps, and they're not running necessarily at him all that often. They're definitely preferring to run him to the right side rather than the left. So I wouldn't call him the weak link or anything like that, but he's not the strength of this offensive line by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, he's learning. And that's the most important thing to keep in mind here. Seen a bunch of conversation in chat about why he's starting, whether it's pass blocking, run blocking. Like, let's not make any mistake. The reason he was drafted is because he has a huge frame and his pass sets are very good. They passed a lot at Southern Utah. They did not run a lot at Southern Utah. And he is a very big guy that moves very well in pass pro. What they also didn't see a lot at Southern Utah were pass rushers that were anywhere near as good as Jerry Hughes. Forget Nick Bosa. So what he is learning is my athleticism and my frame that worked against smaller guys, less skilled guys, whatever else, and I could engulf and kind of basically act as a break and then set, and I could just envelop people. That's not really something that works at the NFL, because there's a lot of guys Braxton Jones size in the NFL. There weren't in college, certainly not in a conference Southern Utah plays in. And he's learning that his very basic but good pass set repertoire is going to need a lot of tweaks. It's going to need tweaks for power. It's going to need tweaks for moves. It's going to need tweaks for all of that. And he's learning. And in the meantime, he's trying to beat people up in the run game because he's got long arms. He's got a big frame and he's trying to lean into people. Jerry Hughes has always been susceptible against the run. If you're going to beat Jerry Hughes, it is in run plays. You're going to be able to overpower him. He is not a huge dig it out kind of defensive end. He is a speed guy. He's a get around guy, and somebody that can run down plays from the backside. So he got on top of him a couple of times. The pass set stuff, Braxton's going to have to continue. He's going to see new stuff every week. You know, next week he's going to go against Kayvon Thibodeau. He's gone against Bosa and the rotating cast of characters for the 49ers. He's seen Jerry Hughes. Every week in the NFL, there is a good pass rusher, and he's going to learn something else by getting beat right now. He's going to get that season of conditioning and development, and then he's going to have all this stuff in the mental rolodex, and then we'll see, like, hey, did he figure out how to beat that hesitation move? Hey, did he figure out how to beat that chop move? Hey, did he figure out how to short set when he knows that that guy's going to try and run right by him? You know, can he counter all that stuff? We'll figure it out, but he's got great physical tools, and again, for this season, you're going to have to let him develop and know that he's not going to win a ton of those one-on-one reps. And the ones that he does win, you're going to count as a bonus.
Yeah. There's a comment on our YouTube comments right here. I just wanted to highlight it. Vincent says that the Herbert run, Braxton missed his man. And this is interesting. If it's the same run that I'm thinking of, because there were a lot of Herbert runs, there were 20 of them to be exact. But if he's talking about the big 50-yard run, what's interesting about that rep is that it's very clear that Braxton is trying to get inside and seal off Malik Collins, and Malik and they're leaving the end man in line of scrimmage alone. They're running to the right. They're leaving the end man, and it's Braxton's job to get inside of Malik Collins. Malik Collins jumps outside of him, so Malik Collins swims over his left, and so. So Braxton's just like, well, all right.
See ya.
Malik Collins is such a pretty impressive athlete, because he takes off after him and he comes close to making the play about, I don't know, 15 yards downfield. Yeah. But he's still a big defensive lineman. Herbert's able to either see him and avoid him, or just on the arc that he was at, able to, like you said, erase the pursuit angles of a guy like Malik Collins. And so, I mean, he jumped to his outside. When you're grading something like that, his job is to make sure that he seals. So if he jumps that way, that guy's wrong, and he's not going to make the play 99 times out of 100 or 9 times out of 10 or whatever it is. So again, when you're grading something like that, you say, oh, he got beat. Well, nah, he didn't get beat. He actually did what he was supposed to. He made sure that Collins didn't make the play running in front of him. He didn't cut him off. He was able to seal him out. So there's certain things that you have to keep in mind where the play is going, and not just exactly what it looks like right away. Braxton Jones did his job on that play. So anyway, yeah. one of those things that's just like,
It's like a screenplay, right? Yeah, on a screenplay, you see, you know, guards stand up and go, oh, you beat me, because they need to get out and get to the second level, because they're going to throw the ball over the head of those defenders that are going to flush into the backside. So at worst, they're just kind of standing up and then getting in the way as those guys trying to turn around. You know, you go, oh man, they gave up, they got beat instantly, right? Well, that's the point. They're trying to free themselves up to go get the second level defenders once that lob comes. So it's a combination of no. On that play, it was very clearly, I'll call it the Red Sea, right? Everybody was just kind of turning to the outside. You see this sometimes in college where literally the protection or the blocking is each lineman stands up and turns like 45 to 90 degrees to the outside. And basically they just run between the butts, right? And that's what happened on this play. Like, it was wide open in the middle because, again, the Texans slanted to the outside and the Bears punched it right up the middle. There was nobody there. That was the tractor trailer hole I was talking about on the Khalil Herbert play. Like, there was no, like, he ran through open space for 8 to 11 yards before anybody even got close. And then he broke the one sort of diving ankle arm tackle. And then he was just off to the races. Then he just ran through the secondary, like straight up just ran through the secondary. So it's a little bit of everything. The rushing attack, again, a historic day, best total since 82. Passing attack, whoo boy. Yeah, we talked about that at the pre-party. The Bears had 29 yards in the first half of passing. 29 in this Sunday in 2022, 29
in
yards.
This economy?
Yeah. We're talking about, I said, because I think it was Courtney Cronin posted that it was the biggest rushing day since 1982 or 1984, I think. And I said, well, that's funny because the passing offense looks straight out of 1984. And everybody's like, I think you screwed up your 8 and your 9. I think it was like 1894. I was like, oh, well, maybe. But yeah, it's a tale of two cities right now. The run blocking is working pretty well. Like, that was a very good day. We saw, again, a whole bunch of extra yards generated by Khalil Herbert. But even on base, again, 100, they would have had 100-plus rushing yards between Fields and Herbert, even if he hadn't added all of those yards. The passing game, oh, boy. Like, there's fundamental problems there, and we'll get to those. But they got to get fixed, because if they don't get fixed and the Bears run into even a decent opponent, not going to win anything in the modern NFL with, you know, 100 and something yards passing. Like, that's not gonna
that's for future JB and EJ to worry about, because
correct
this
our future selves problem.
Yes, we'll push that off. We'll hopefully get better tape to review, but that's what we got today, man. I think that this was fun, and we'll continue to work through these different players that we think could be building blocks here. Let's take another look at these beers though before we get out of here. I gotta tell you, I have pretty successfully cut sugar out of my life. And I don't drink a lot of beer anymore. I drink a beer with you, and that's pretty much it. I drink a lot of whiskey still, but
because yeah, that doesn't have any sugar in it.
Well, it's different.
It's converted, you know? Sugars,
it's different. It's converted. And so I haven't really been drinking the beer, haven't been drinking the sugar. So this Belgian red, pretty sugary, and I gotta tell you, not enjoyable when you're not used to sugar. So
yeah,
like, it was just too much. And so I only had about half of it. Again, I think it's got a really good flavor. And if you are unlike me and are still eating sugar, you probably love it. For me, it's just like, it was just a blast of too much sweetness. And I couldn't handle it. So again, I know it's a good beer. I'm just not enjoying it. Things the same way anymore. What about you?
Reds go two ways. They either go towards that really heavy, caramely, sugary, like almost an amber just turned a little bit on its head to be a red. That's one way. And the other way they go is kind of spicy, right? They'll add some spices to it, and it'll be a bit thinner, a bit tangier, a lot tangier, I'll say. So it's always like, well, what kind of red is it, right? Because red's a pretty wide category. Some of them I love, and some of them not so much. That one sounds like I'd actually like it based on the flavor profile. This doesn't have a ton of sugar in it. It has a little bit of sweetness. It is sort of warmer and rounder than a lot of lagers. A lot of lagers, very crisp, very light. This happens to be like if a winter beer and a lager had a baby, right? If they met in the middle, this would be it. It has a lot of flavor. You know, fairly high on the alcohol for a lager, 6.2. I love it. I love the flavor combination profile. It is leading you into all those darker, heavier, you know, winter beers, but it is, you know, it's not yet there. It's like fall in a can. And I love that.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'd pick up some of that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get out of here. What's going on with you? I guess the big thing right now is we'd love to see a little bit more questions, more comments that you would like us to address in the Sunday gambling and fantasy live stream. Everybody, the thing on Twitter, the joke on Twitter is like, no one cares about your fantasy team. You know, Den Master Ken was like, hey guys, no one cares about your fantasy team. And I was like, correction. Eric Smith and I care about your fantasy team. Bring your questions, bring your trade offers, bring your start sits. We actually like talking about that stuff. We're weird. So if you wake up on Sunday morning and you're like, I don't know what bets to put in. I don't know what daily fantasy lineup to use. I don't know who to start sit. I don't know if I should accept this trade offer from this guy who keeps nagging me about it. Bring it to us and we'll be the arbiters. We'll let you know. So we're having a lot of fun and we've been profitable every week, which is not something a lot of betting shows can say. Ross and I have been doing quite well on the betting end of it. We've been very close to doing really, really well, but we have been profitable every week, and that is all that matters. And so that's been a lot of fun. That's going to be Sundays at 10, unless we have to like move it around. Again, if I end up going to that relocate that game up to Minneapolis, they may have to move the show up a little bit to give us some time in Minneapolis. But Sunday mornings, 10 o'clock on this YouTube channel, Second City Gridiron YouTube channel, for those of you that are joining us there. It's just a YouTube product. It's not a podcast because we're doing it right before the game start. Love to have you there. And how's Thursday Night Football live stream going?
It's good. We've been having a lot of fun. First week we had fun, but we had audio issues that were phantom. We isolated that. There's no more Robo EJ voice. Sorry for those of you that liked it better. We cleaned up all the audio issues and had a really good broadcast, I think, last Thursday, and are really looking forward to this Thursday. I mean, yeah. Dolphins, Bengals, two of the most explosive offenses in the NFL. Teams that definitely have some holes, Bengals more than Dolphins, but little spoiler alert, if you're into defense, if you're one of those people like Jesse Bates versus Javon Holland on safety, it's like literally two of the best safeties playing in the NFL right now. That is pure safety porn. If you are into safety play, check out Thursday night's game. Two of the best doing it right now, going at it.
So what's your safety word for that game? Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh my goodness. Well, I could probably come up with one for each team that would annoy them greatly. But it should be a great game. Should be fun. Both teams are fairly healthy. Tua's not in concussion protocol. I don't know how, but he's not. So he'll be there. Burrow's, you know, legs haven't been cut out from under him yet, despite the long developing offense and offensive line play that hasn't been great. So should be a ton of fun. We'll be filling out slips for that from Prize Picks, both before the game and at halftime. Brett finally got 5 out of 5 last week. He finally hit 5 out of 5. He's been like you. He's been tickling it the whole season. He was 4 out of 5 on his first 2 or 3 slips. Hit a 5 out of 5 on the Thursday live stream last week. So we're getting better. And then Bootleg Football Podcast drops every Tuesday. We're recording this on a Tuesday. It'll be out later tonight. But yeah, we're plowing ahead. Tons of football, digging in, having fun. This week was a little odd. There were a lot of sort of ugly games that a lot of fan bases wanted to forget. But I'm hoping that next week we just wipe that slate clean and go right into week 4 with eyes wide open, get a lot of good football.
Love it. It's all deadly. All right, man. Well, we'll get out of here. We'll stick around for a couple Q&A for the YouTube people. But for those of you listening to the podcast, thanks for joining us. Until next time, bear down.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.